The Phantom Menace opens at midnight.
Place in the Star Wars line.
Started lining up over a month ago.
All right, get out your lightsabers.
You just may have noticed that Star Wars, the latest episode, opens nationally at midnight tonight.
The hype surrounding this movie has been overwhelming. Now the question is, will it deliver?
They're about to open the doors here in just a few minutes, and people are revved up.
Some 2.2 million Americans from New York to...
Welcome, everyone, from across the universe to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Star Wars is for everyone, so pull up a chair, get comfortable, and join the conversation with your hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast, part of the Thunderquack Podcast Network. This is episode number 556, The Hype. I'm, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, the Ben Quadraneros and Rats Tyrell. To my Gascano, we've got Carl LeClaire and Silver from Star Wars Thrifting.
Oh my goodness, this 1990 hype, I'm ready for it. Silver, yes. I couldn't think of anyone more fitting than you to talk about the Phantom Menace hype as we're sitting here just a few days away from its re-release.
Oh, I am happy to be here. I mean, I love to hype y'all talking about the hype, so this is a place to be. So, what's better to, you know, take a trip down memory lane back to 1999 where Star Wars being back in theaters and yeah, we were just all excited for it. So I'm happy, the week of, we're recording on the week of the Phantom Menace returning in theaters. So this is a fun place to be. So thank you for having me.
Our pleasure.
Absolutely.
I know we were talking a little bit there for a moment before we were recording about how you've been pretty busy the last few days and weeks with everybody. You know, you're like really getting the rounds in with all these different amazing podcasters. And like you're kind of you're the resident Star Wars, like Phantom Menace, like nostalgia person. The amount of stuff you've found in the last year, it seems like. It's like, wow, if you just want to like know what it was like to be falling in love with Phantom Menace, like go to Star Wars Thrifting, like go to the social medias and look at those posts. Yeah. Silver's crushing it.
Absolutely. Yeah, honestly, it's great. I love being able to connect with other people and everyone, you know, kind of celebrating 25 years of this fantastic movie. It's just been really a blast. And I love that we're kind of at that moment right now. Everyone's just busting out the old collectibles and talking about the old merchandise and, you know, just all the crazy fun promos that came along with this movie. It's been really fun. So I don't only do it for the 25th anniversary. I do it. It's pretty my whole, it's my whole personality at this point. So
you live it. You live
it. I 100% yeah. Live the hype. I want to always feel what the hype was.
Well, just
I,
like the
I
MIDI,
do have a.
Well, I was just going to say, like the just like the midi-chlorians formed Anakin into being. I think the hype of the 99 Phantom Menace nostalgia congealed and became Silver.
Yes, 100%.
But before we start like breaking down like the different aspects of just the hype of the Phantom Menace in 1999, I did have a quick question. Do either of you think there was a movie hyped more than the Phantom Menace in 1999? Because as far as in my lifetime, I can't think of one. But I don't know. The level of the pure volume and level of insanity and products and everyone that wanted to be in on it seemed like the heights that had never been reached before and will never be reached again.
Yeah, you know, I actually do not remember. I don't know of anything before Phantom Menace. I was 10 when the movie came out, so if anything, I want to feel like maybe Force Awakens is probably like as close, but I don't think so. Not anything before that I remember, certainly, as you know, especially like leading up. I know, like, maybe after a movie, I want to say like in the 90s, like after Titanic, it was after the fact, after the movie came out, that was like, it was a big deal. Right. But this was the hype was coming before the movie. Especially when George Lucas announced like Star Wars coming back, and especially Phantom Menace coming at the tail end of the special editions and the re-release, and Star Wars very much, you know, being back in the big conversation. I just do not remember a movie having that type of like momentum leading up to the actual release.
Yeah. I think the closest we got up until 99 was probably Jurassic Park in 93.
Yes.
Not definitely not like this, but I do think that was probably the most, from my early memory of 90s movies, like Jurassic Park, there was, as soon as those trailers came out and people saw what looked like real dinosaurs, I mean, people were chomping at the bit for, I think that came out in June of 93. But it's funny too, because Jurassic Park is in part responsible for Phantom Menace. You know, it proved to George they had the technology. Right. He goes and does the special editions, then starts the prequels. But to your point, Jason, with Force Awakens, I think the hype was close to Phantom Menace, but I don't think it ever hit those highs, because I think, and this is something I think I would love to talk briefly about maybe at the end of the episode, but Phantom Menace, I would sort of argue, and this is also because Phantom Menace came out at the early age of the internet as well, but it was the first time Star Wars really had a lot of negativity focused. And like, obviously we are not focusing on any of our attention on that stuff today, but just to say, I think there were Star Wars fans that had their hearts broken in a way with Phantom Menace. So yeah. I think there was a level of wariness in the fandom in Force Awakens era. And there's just been a lot more online trolling since then. So I don't feel like there's ever been that like optimistic anticipation that we had with Phantom Menace.
Yeah, that's fair.
But you know, Silver, you mentioned something that I think is really integral to even talking about the hype, which is, of course, George using the special editions essentially is for two purposes. One purpose was to just say, hey, is there still a desire and culture for Star Wars movies, right? Like, let's see if people would be excited about Star Wars again. And I've got all this new technology that ILM created for Jurassic Park. What if we brought it back on the big screen and saw if there was hype still there? And I want to play this really quick, because I think even just this trailer for the special editions kind of told us why we needed Star Wars back on the big screen.
For an entire generation, people have experienced Star Wars the only way it's been possible, on the TV screen. But if you've only seen it this way, you haven't seen it at all. For its 20th anniversary, the adventure of a lifetime returns to the big screen in a way you've never seen before.
I love the trailer for the special editions, right? Just kind of hitting home. So I should also ask this really quick, because I think it's worthwhile for folks listening to just know even where we were at in this period. I was born in 85, so I was 13 during the hype period of Phantom Menace. And so when the special editions came out, I had just become a Star Wars fan in like 1995, early 96. And I remember thinking like, oh, this is perfect. Just as I'm being introduced to these stories, George is putting them back on the big screen. What a nice guy. Oh, and he's going to make new ones? Like, this is perfect. So I was like super psyched. And I think this trailer even back in 96 was like, yes, this is so true, because I've only ever watched them on my little TV screen at home with my VHS tapes. So just kind of the magic that we were promised getting Star Wars back on the big screen, I think was a really big stepping off point for Phantom Menace.
Yeah, absolutely. I was 10 in 1999. I was like, my birthday was in May, and so I was turning 10 as the movie came out. So I feel like it was the perfect age to see Phantom Menace. I was introduced to Star Wars when the special editions came to theaters. So my mom, I've told the story on the podcast before. My mom is an OG fan. She saw it 11 times in the theater in 1977, during that year. So when it was being re-released in the theaters, my parents were like, yeah, well, we'll introduce the kids to it. And I was transported to a galaxy far, far away, much further than either of my siblings was. and so when The Phantom Menace was coming out, I was already pumped because I was, you know, living in this world with all my toys and my imagination. And now I was getting new stuff, new characters, new places to visit. And I was really hyped. So, yeah. Where were you at in 99?
Yeah, you know, similar for me. Like, I remember the special editions going into theaters. I come from a big family of big Star Wars fans, thanks to my dad and my uncles. And even like when the Power of the Force figures came out, when the special editions were coming out, I remember them buying the toys and telling us, hey, these are our toys. You know, they stay in the box. And telling a kid that, it's just like, oh, my goodness. Like, what do you mean I can't open up this toy and play? So I feel like that's when I started to really grasp of like what Star Wars, you know, was. And even like my earliest memories, Star Wars was always playing like in a family barbecue or like my grandma's house. Like, you know, it's just like I always had early memories of it. But yeah, I was 10 and when Star Wars was around the corner and, you know, my dad was just I really felt the excitement of my dad, really, going out and, you know, buying the first Phantom Menace toys and just feeling the excitement of this movie. I had not seen the movie yet, obviously, but I, as a kid, you can't not remember how everyone felt around you. And even like in school, kids were talking about it. And I felt the excitement around me, not understanding really what it was up in, you know, and of course, after I saw the movie, then I was like, okay, I get it. I understand. It makes sense. This makes sense. I get it.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, and I think one of the most interesting things with The Phantom Menace as well is while we saw it first probably in, you know, 1983 with Return of the Jedi, where you saw people sort of camping out, right? People were lining up sometimes days in advance, but it became this whole new thing with Phantom Menace. And this was just for the tickets going on sale, right? You had people... I read in, I just finished rereading Christopher Taylor's How Star Wars Conquered the Universe. And I think, because he does an entire chapter on like the hype of Phantom Menace. And I think the record for like most camped out days before this was like close to 200 days before the tickets went on sale. Like it was crazy. And
wild.
And it talked about like the chapter is really great too, because it talks a lot about how, you know, the folks that actually chose to pitch these tents and stay out, they became this really close-knit community because there were only so many that actually went that hardcore. And they took turns like, you know, covering for other people if somebody needed to go out and get groceries or if somebody did have to go to work for the day. Like they came up with this very communal aspect of it was like they were their own little ghost crew. Right. And, you know, and flying together. And it was just so neat. And I don't think you'd ever seen that for any other movie, you know, going back to your opening question, Jason, of has there ever been anything like this? I can't think of anything before or since where people camped out like that. I mean, it was like little communal camps outside of movie theaters just for Phantom Menace.
Yeah, I do remember some camping out happening for Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, but I don't think it was as extreme. And I think by then you had ticket pre-sales that you could do. Mm-hmm. Theaters were starting to do ticket pre-sales in the early 2000s at some point. So I think they were shifting away from it being necessary to even, camp out. But some people did just because of the, you know, they wanted to experience that. But yeah, I remember seeing, you know, news articles about it, and news blurbs about it. And I know I wanted to camp out at one point, but I don't think I ever asked my parents because I knew there was no way they were going to agree to it. So, but I was like, I think what I was concerned, though, is because it was getting to the point where, you know, we were like a week before the movie and the lines that were camping out at some of the theaters, you know, and it was probably just like a few theaters in random places across the country, was like wrapping around the building. And I don't know if it was that case in San Antonio where I was living at the time, but I remember being concerned that if we didn't get in line early enough, we wouldn't be able to get tickets opening weekend. But it ended up obviously not being that big of a deal, and I saw the movie opening weekend just fine. But yes, I do remember as a 10-year-old going, are we even going to be able to get into the theater? So yeah, it was a big deal.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. And I think, you know, something else that was big for all of this, and if you pull up any old newsreels from 1999 about Phantom Menace building up to this, almost every news anchor across the nation asked the question of, like, this is the most anticipated movie of all time. Will it deliver? Right? Like, those two things kind of went hand in hand. And Phantom Menace did this really interesting thing, I think, both for Star Wars fandom, but even kind of pop culture at large with the way it kind of had to hold those questions, because nothing had ever been anticipated like this before. And it's funny because, you know, all of us were young. You're both 10. I'm 13 years old. I mean, we're kids. And because the internet also wasn't super big still at the time, I know we had it, but we didn't have easy access to it. And I'm sure you all remember dial up, right? You'd load a website, walk away for an hour and come back to look.
Oh, yeah. But,
you know, so it wasn't the same. So I, you know, being young, I didn't like have any sensibility of anything other than this is going to be awesome. And I know we're going to get tickets. And I just trusted my uncle to get them for us. And he did. And that was great. And I do remember waiting in a long line, even at the theater to like get in that night. Cause right. You couldn't reserve seats back then. Yeah. And boy, there was just something, there was just like this energy, this buzz in the air of how much people were anticipating this. And, you know, obviously hindsight is 2020, but man, that is a lot of pressure on George Lucas, right? Like, and I think all three of us would agree, cause we all love the heck out of this movie, that George delivered just fine. Like, this is a freaking awesome movie. We love it. But no matter what, somebody was going to be disappointed. There was no hands, you know, that, and George was bold with just telling the story he wanted to tell. I think just that electricity in the air has just never been there before. And it was damn awesome. So, obviously all of us were quite young and obviously would not have been able to, but would you have camped out if you had had that kind of agency, right? If you weren't a child, like if we weren't children and we actually had that agency of making that decision for ourselves, would you have done it?
About 200 days. It's hard for me to go camping for 3 days. Yeah. I did do the midnight. I did see a Revenge of the Sith at midnight with my friends, and we had ditched last day of school. Well, not last day of school. It was towards the last day of school. You know, we ditched class and we waited in line, and we got in line at 9 a.m. for a midnight showing. And that was fun. And that was, we had a great theater back in here in San Jose in the early 2000s, where it was this big dome theater that held, I don't know how many seats, just not your average amount of movie theater seats, but it held a lot of people. And it was a big parking lot, and there was tents, and people had been out there already for a week or 2 weeks. But I do remember how exciting that was. Now, if you ask me, would I have done it for Phantom Menace? I probably would say, I'm saying yes. Just maybe not 200 days. I think I'd probably do the week. Everyone did for Revenge of the Sith. I'd probably camp out for the week, you know, and I'd make somebody hold my spot. I went home and went to bed and come back the next morning. I don't know about the overnight thing, but I mean, I understand it is fun. It's like, you know, it's like when you're at Star Wars Celebration, you're in line with all these people, you become friends with them because, you know, we're all strangers, but we all love this thing so much that, you know, you become friends with everybody. And I get that. I love that feeling. And, but yeah, I mean, honestly, why not? I would love to just skip work and just camp out. I would do it.
Yeah. If I had the wherewithal, I would say the week prior, I probably would have been out there. You know, depending on the situation, but yeah, I think a week is a good amount of time beforehand. Yeah. Especially, you know, because it came out on the 19th, right? Yes. Mm-hmm. It was May 19th. That's 5 days after my birthday. So like, this is my birthday present. I'm going to go camp out for Star Wars. I would have made that excuse. So, you know, I share a birthday with George Lucas on May 14th. So yes, it's, you know, that's, I would have made that excuse. I'm like, this is my birthday present. I'm going to go wait in line, for Star Wars. And, it would have been more difficult, I think, in San Antonio at the time because of how hot it was.
Oh, hot.
How unbearably hot and humid it would have been. But I would have stuck it out. So what about you, Carl? Would you have camped out?
I'm very much in the silver camp. I hate camping, so it would have been hard. I mean, my heart would have been there. My ability to sleep overnight would not have been. So, but yes, I would have wanted to have figured out a way to do it to some capacity. Definitely not 200 days, maybe a week. But and I never did it for any others. Like you, Silver, the only one I saw in Midnight was Revenge of the Sith for the prequels. Finally old enough to like make that decision. So, that's that anticipation of people coming together was so cool. But to me, like probably one of the biggest things to kick off the, you know, that kind of like last ditch effort of like, hey, this movie's right around the corner, was the release of the toys, which was the first ever Star Wars Midnight toy release. And it was on
Midnight Madness.
Yeah. Midnight Madness. So Sunday, May 2nd, 1999, they gave us our first look at the action figures. You know, everybody loved Toys R Us. So let's take a little trip to Toys R Us in 1999.
Now, even toy mavens have to sleep sometimes, right? Wrong. No naps allowed on May 3rd because 1 minute past midnight, the Brandon Toys R Us store would open its doors. The occasion? The debut of Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace toy line. Despite the sign out front, there were multiple toy items going on sale. The employees were getting ready for the legions of figure-starred rebels outside. Battle droids had to be assembled, end caps had to be accessorized, and boxes of figures and toys had to find their place. Even yours truly pitched in. But would everything be set to blast the doors open at 12:01 a.m.? Hey, we're talking Toys R Us here. Outside, the crowd knew what they wanted.
Star Wars figures. You gotta have them, they're coming out.
I'm here for the smiling Darth Maul.
Go. I'm mainly looking for the figures. I think there'll be plenty of those to go around.
Darth Maul. I want to check out Darth Maul. He's going to be the new king.
The line stretched down the sidewalk. Every Jedi was anxious for their first glimpse at the new characters and especially the inflatable rafts. A few shared their battle strategies.
I plan to like elbow people out of the way. No, we're going to be nice and, you know, Jedi-like and just let people go by.
She's actually going to hurl me over everybody else. We're going to do kind of a Shaolin Kung Fu technique that we've been practicing all week. It's going to be very entertaining.
Others in...
There's just a little bit of the love. I don't even know. Y'all, like, I spent my Sunday afternoon this past week just watching 1999 YouTube clips for Phantom Menace. I had one of the best days I've had in a long time just, like, watching these.
It's a mess.
But, right, like, it seems like I love this because this is before the movie came out. And just hearing people, right, of course, the main draw is those action figures. You know, the Kenner, the Kenner figures from 77 through 85 were so popular. And obviously I'm playing a video that y'all can't see, but the majority of the people they're interviewing are look to be people who are probably my age now. So probably like 30s, maybe some late 20s. But, you know, these people that grew up as young kids on the originals just in line to get these action figures. And I wanted to make sure I kept in enough of it so you could hear the shout out to the inflatables, because as we're chatting with you, Silver, right behind you is a C-3PO inflatable. You've got a couple of these inflatables, don't you?
I do have these inflatables. These inflatables are so awesome. I mean, I just feel like being a 90s kid, these were so like popular. I feel like if you had a if you had not just Star Wars, I just feel like any inflatable chair in like your room, you were like, you were a cool kid and your parents probably had like money to have an inflatable chair in like your kit, like in your room with all your toys. And these inflatable are really fun. I have quite a bit. What I really liked about that video is the mention of Darth Maul. I feel like Darth Maul was just that character that people saw hints of the trailer, or even like when the first images came out, it's like, who is that guy? That guy is cool. And the fact that people are ready to bust those doors at 12:01 because they want to go for the Darth Maul. That's the character that's just like, okay, that's the character that's getting everyone really excited. And rightfully so. He looks terrifying. His name is Darth. Like Darth, there's another Darth. Like, are you kidding me? Like, what's in the relation of Darth Vader? So, I mean, it's fun. It's fun. I think Lucasfilm does a really great job. Anytime when they're, whether it's a new TV show, or a book or any new Star Wars stories, they know how to tease you enough to just be like, okay, you know, we're going to show you an image of this character. This is a brand new character, and to kind of get everyone just excited. I have no idea. We have no idea who this character or what his deal is. He just looks cool. I want to buy all the toys of this new brand new character. And, that's just really, really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. We had the Jar Jar inflatable chair, but my brother and I would get into wrestling matches over who could sit in it because we only had the one. So we popped the damn thing. We had two of them and they both were destroyed.
I hope you didn't get exiled from Otto Gunga for that.
I mean, I was already exiled from Otto Gunga. Let's be
Jason's
honest.
Mom walks in the room, you know, and she's like, "You said to be punished."
Yeah. Yes, yes. You know, you say boom to Gasser, then crash into boss's hay liver and banished. but yeah, no, the Darth Maul, like you said, was everywhere. He was everywhere. I know my brother was super into him at the time. You know, or saw the background color scheme of all the marketing was, you know, red and black because of Darth Maul. I was always into all the Jar Jar stuff because for whatever reason, I latched on to Jar Jar early on. Everyone around me was all into Darth Maul. So I do remember that he was cool. He was scary. He did have the cool new double bladed lightsaber, which was something brand new and exciting. It was like, what? How is this possible? He hit so many of the cool boxes that it was impossible to escape him in all of the hype. And I think rightly so.
For sure. Yeah. I was not able to go to the midnight thing because actually I don't even know if my town had one, to be honest. And if they did, my mom kept that information from me because I'm sure she wouldn't have let me go anyway. But I do remember my mom taking me that first weekend I don't exactly remember when, but I know it wasn't the day they were released. And when I went there, I really just wanted to make sure I could get Darth Maul, like, you know, like we've mentioned, and like all the folks in line were saying how much they wanted that. And I know that I was only allowed to get a couple, so I got Darth Maul, Obi-Wan, and Qui-Gon, you know, and I'd seen enough of the trailers. I had watched those trailers over and over again that I couldn't wait to go home and recreate that duel that I saw just snippets of on my TV screen at home. And yeah, leaving that Toys R Us with just those three figures. And I still to this day, I couldn't tell you which ones I got next. I know I got a bunch of others as, you know, the year went on, but those three I went and got first. And, boy, did they give me tremendous amounts of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think my first figure was the Jar Jar on Caddo.
Nice.
I think it was that. And then my brother and I got the deluxe Qui-Gon and Darth Maul, where they were attached to the lightsabers and that so they could like swing the sabers back and forth. They had little lightsaber hilts that you could attach to them, that you could also, when when it wasn't attached to the figure, also came out as like a little tiny lightsaber. But yeah, we started with the deluxe figures, and then I just sort of like started collecting the regular figures and getting them as gifts for my birthday and all that stuff as time went on. Do you remember your first figure that year, Silver?
To be honest, I didn't really go after the figures. I just wanted the lightsabers. I think the first toy I got was like the Qui-Gon lightsaber, and like it lit up. And I don't remember going after the figures. I would always go for like the Queen Amidala coloring books, but definitely like the lightsaber. That Qui-Gon lightsaber, I still to this day, I remember opening it up and, you know, my dad having to like unscrew to put the batteries in. And that was just like just one of my favorite things. I remember really just, you know, getting that year.
I've still got mine, my Qui-Gon lightsaber from 99. Those things are made well. By the way, they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not like the kid ones that are out today.
Like the retractable. Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah. I remember because I was such a big action figure kid, the lightsabers kind of fell behind, like, cause the good, those good, like the Qui-Gon one, they came out with a Maul one. I think they were like $50 or something, which to me was like, man, that's, I could buy 5 action figures for that.
Yeah.
But CVS was selling their own version of those lightsabers as well. So I got Obi-Wan's and Darth Maul's, and they were much, much cheaper. And that showed, because my cousins bought the Qui-Gon and the Darth Maul, like the good one. And when the three of us had our first duel, my lightsaber went flying out of the hilt very fast. So, I always wanted the Qui-Gon one, and I actually never got it as a kid, but my good friend Greg, he was kind enough when he was moving his house a couple of years ago. He unloaded a bunch of his Star Wars stuff, and he's like, I know you always wanted this. Oh, it was like Ben Kenobi handing me my future. So nice. Thanks, Greg.
Yeah.
I love it. And I think something that was really neat though with the Phantom Menace toys is because Silver, you mentioned, you know, the Power of the Force 2 line that started in 95, and everybody obviously knows these as the famous He-Man figures, but those are the ones I grew up with. I still love them. But with Phantom Menace, I really feel like they doubled down on how good the likenesses were. And then they also added a fun little gimmick where these action figures could talk.
Listen, the explosive words and sounds of the Star Wars Comtech system. Imagine yourself in the movie.
I sense a disturbance in the Force. May the Force be with you. Use your instinct. It will be a Jedi, I promise. You have been well trained.
You haven't experienced Star Wars until you've experienced Comtech. Figures come with chips, readers sold separately, batteries not included. It's your universe.
Those Comtechs are pretty iconic. The voice of the Comtechs are honestly, I should be studied more.
Who were they?
Obviously not the voice of the actors. Which is so, I want to know that, like, I just want to know, like, why, you know, why that was. And, you know, I have no idea anything about like merchandising and licensing or anything like that, but it's just really funny. I think those Comtechs, I think everyone should have those Comtechs. I have tons of those. Those voices, they're quite fun. They're quite fun.
Something else. There's something else. That's for sure. Yeah. No, I remember thinking it was so cool back in the day. And then as I got older, even just a few years afterwards, like, as the rest of the prequels were coming out, I was like, these don't really sound like anything from the movie. That may be part of when I started trying to imitate all the characters, because I could do it better than the Comtech readers. but part of the just terrible voices is why they're so iconic. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that was just part of the technology at the time or what the case was, but it's, and then of course, if the battery was low, it would come out real garbled too.
Oh yeah.
You know, which was another level of hilarity. Like I remember one time when the battery was starting to run low and it was just all weird and garbled. And I was like, ooh, I need to try all of my contexts, all of them now to see how crazy it sounds. I think Padme was nearly ununderstandable, you know? So, but yeah, it was hilarious.
Yeah, they were great. I loved having my Comtech reader. And even after seeing the movie, I was like, yeah, these don't sound anything like it. I just didn't care. Cause it was just something cool and new. I loved that kind of just feature they gave us. And then, you know, when the Attack of the Clones figures came out, they gave us every figure had some sort of action ability. Right. So I've always appreciated how like Kenner, Hasbro, as they've kind of put out subsequent waves of action figures, just thinking of something new to put with it, I think is just fun. Whether or not they land or not in the long run, I kind of think doesn't matter. I just like that innovative thought process of like, what could be fun here? And I feel like the Comtech is debatably one of the most actual like tech savvy things they did, which is kind of perfectly in line with this really first all powerful CGI movie. Right. So it's like, let's make our figures CGI in a way, you know, it was really neat. So for me, when I think of Phantom Menace hype, so sorry to like commandeer for a second, but I know my biggest excitement that I got early was the soundtrack, which was released on May 4th. Star Wars Day wasn't really a thing in 1999. Definitely not like it is today. And I really can't wait for the day when it just becomes like a national holiday. And we just get the day off work or an observed Friday or Monday. But all that to say, it's just so cool that the soundtrack was released on May the 4th. And just, you know, right around the corner from the release of the action figures. And what I loved with Phantom Menace, the score, is that they gave us this incredible music video for Duel of the Fates. Now, they did do a music video for Lapty Neck back in 83. But MTV was very young at the time. But in the 90s, MTV's huge and TRL is huge. Total Request Live. And that's where it got its premiere, was on TRL, this Star Wars music video. And there was all this hubblub about it, you know, down there in New York City.
We came all the way from Michigan to New York City with a group of college students. Uh-huh. And instead of going to the bar last night, we went to Toys R Us to get some Star Wars toys.
Are you kidding me?
No, no.
You are such a geek, Stacey.
Yeah, I am a geek.
That's awesome. I'm so proud of you because I'm a geek too. That is great. What'd you get?
We got new lightsabers.
Stacey's working the crowd. Did you get the groovy double-edged?
Double-edged sword.
Those are badass.
They're awesome.
I'm going to have to stock up on those. So you're ready to check a third look at the Star Wars video. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah.
Are you guys ready?
Yeah!
Very well. Let's take another look. The London Symphony Orchestra, conducted by John Williams. This is Duel of the Fates.
Man, I loved this hype. Like, this was, I mean, MTV was what the cool kids were watching when I was in school. And Star Wars was there now. Like, this thing that I was starting to kind of keep to myself was, like, on MTV. I felt like I could say stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really cool about MTV. For all the prequel movies, MTV really covered every prequel movie that came out, which is really, really cool. I mean, I get it. You know, you wanna go after a new generation, a younger demographic, and MTV is the place to do it. It's just really interesting that Duel of the Fates was in the TRL countdown in 1999 alongside like Britney Spears, Enrique Iglesias, and NSYNC on the countdown, which is really, really fun. I actually have somebody had recorded the whole TRL on a VHS tape, and I actually have the VHS tape, so I actually watched the entire. I can watch that entire episode of them covering Star Wars, which is really, really fun, and when they debuted the movie, but. It's just it's really fun and really special. Like the fact that the Duel of the Fates music video is just, you know, again amongst the countdown of a Total Request Live is pretty iconic in itself.
Yeah, and it ranked, like it was on TRL for a couple of weeks.
Yeah,
right. I'm so jealous you have that VHS. I remember taping it myself when it was on TV, and I had it for the longest time. I think eventually when my dad sold the house I grew up in, a lot of things just kind of disappeared, and that went into the void. But I loved that. And Right. Like you said, it's, we got the premiere on MTV TRL, and also it was popular enough that it made the rankings with Britney and Viva La Vida Loca, or
Living La Vida Loca. Yeah,
Ricky
it's
Martin.
Pretty,
it's so cool. Like it did something, I think, for like Star Wars fans, I think in my age range, maybe yours as well. I mean, you two are like just enough younger than me at that age, like a 10-year-old and a 13 to 14-year-old. That's a bit of an age gap at that period of life. I was entering, like, I'm in middle school at this point. People are, you know, less kind at that age because they're figuring themselves out. And Star Wars, when I started middle school, wasn't cool. But then it was on MTV and it was like, yeah, maybe I am cool for loving this. I loved it. I
honestly missed all of the hype on MTV with the soundtrack and the Duel of the Fates and everything. Like, I never watched MTV. I was, you know, my mom thought I was too young at the time for that, I guess. I don't know. I was probably, too busy doing other things. We didn't watch a ton of TV anyways at that time. But, so I missed all of this. All of this stuff. I love hearing all the stories of you guys talking about it because it's something that just completely passed me by. And I didn't even get the soundtrack until my birthday. Like the big friends party that we had like the weekend after the movie came out, because a friend gifted it to me for my birthday. So I missed the big spoiler on the soundtrack. I missed seeing the Duel of the Fates music video until it was on my DVD special features in 2000, 2001, whenever that came out. It was, I don't know how I managed, but I missed all of that. So I love hearing all the stories and you know, how hyped and excited everybody was for all of that. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Track 15, Qui-Gon's Noble End. And you know, it's funny, when I first, like, as I was first listening through the soundtrack and reading the titles of the tracks, I don't think it actually dawned on me right away. It took like a minute and I'm like, wait a minute. Oh, he's going to die. So, which again, like I think we knew kind of going into it, we've never seen or heard of this character in the original. So in some way, shape or form, he won't be around. Doesn't necessarily mean death, but boy, did the soundtrack make it pretty apparent.
Big spoiler.
I was spoiled on that though, before the movie, because it was mentioned in a review that my dad was reading like the weekend before the movie came out. It was in our local paper. I don't know if it was a nationally syndicated review that was just reprinted or if it was someone who worked for the local paper, but there was a clip of a, you know, an excerpt from an interview with Liam Neeson that he wasn't going to be in any of the subsequent movies. So it was like, you know, how do you feel being a part of it, even, you know, for just this movie? And my dad was like, oh, great. I guess that means he dies. Because he's sitting there. We're sitting there like at breakfast or something the morning before we go watch the movie. And he's reading the reviews to us because I was super hyped and I want to get excited. And that happened. I was like, oh, well,
crap.
Okay. So, yeah. But I still loved it anyway. So,
yeah, I ate that soundtrack up. I listened to it nonstop right up till the movie and well after the movie. That was my stage of where I was reading nothing but Star Wars books in my free time. If I wasn't playing with my Star Wars action figures, I was reading Star Wars books.
Yeah.
And I loved the special edition double CD releases that we had in 97. So I was listening to those on rotation as I read every Star Wars book, or even as I was playing with my action figures in the room. So to get a brand new soundtrack, I mean, granted, it's only 2 years later, but 2 years later, I'd been listening to these things ad nauseum. So to have, you know, like 17 new Star Wars tracks to listen to as I played with my Star Wars world was super exciting.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Silver, I'm curious with the, you know, your thrifting adventures and your flea market adventures. Are Phantom Menace like figures and Phantom Menace products, are they pretty prevalent? Because I think a lot of folks also know this is probably one of the most mass produced times in Star Wars history. I mean, everything was, you know, the infamous Jar Jar lollipop, to soap dispensers, to all the things. You know, I think Disney does a really good job. If you think this is a good job, I mean, they do a really good job of also doing lots of production now. But man, Phantom Menace, like, nothing was free from getting a Star Wars label on it. So I'm curious if that seems to be a pretty prevalent thing that you have found in kind of your, you know, your adventures.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's everywhere. Honestly, I find more Phantom Menace stuff than I do, I mean, anything else. And, which is just when I think I've seen it all, I'll find something new and I'll be like, I've never seen this before. And of course it's some Phantom Menace tie-in, which is always fun. But yeah, I mean, it was mass produced. That's why they definitely scaled back for Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. But I mean, I know we're talking about how much we enjoyed and love these action figures and toys. A lot of people were disappointed with the movie, I think. And all those action figures, you know, I think were just not really, you know, people really didn't keep them and or they donated them and stuff. And that's, again, I think that's how I reap the benefit because they end up at garage sales and stuff. So, yeah, it's pretty. I mean, again, like I said, just like I thought I've seen it all. You know, I'll find something new that is like Phantom Menace, but I find more Phantom Menace stuff than I do any other era of Star Wars.
Yeah,
and even like
it was everywhere. It was everywhere. You couldn't walk down a single aisle in the grocery store without finding something plastered with the Phantom Menace on it. You know, from you know, chips to Band-Aids. You know, I distinctly remember getting Star Wars Band-Aids at that time. We stocked up on them because they had different boxes, and I was like, well, we need one of each. So, but yeah, you could not escape it. It was literally everywhere, from, you know, like I said, from chips to Band-Aids to soda cans. Carl,
yeah, you got you're setting me up here. Oh my gosh, I'm totally playing. Yeah, you're
a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Everyone, we've got to save the queen.
Where's her dad? Mr. Jar Jar Binks, come for comic relief.
Emergency landing on Tatooine.
No, pod racing is with
love you, Mom.
Love you, Padme.
Oh no, Darth Maul, my brains are spilling out.
Oh joy, weird.
This is the weirdest date I've ever been on.
I'm out of here.
Go, you must.
Farewell.
Bye-bye.
Star Wars Episode 1 cans collect all 24 this summer.
All right, yes, the 24 Pepsi cans. Oh,
Marfalump.
What's that character's name?
Marfalump is an icon, and it's a shame that there's not enough actually merchandise at all of Marfalump. I really love those commercials, and I really like this commercial specifically just because Marfalump is on a date, an alien creature on a date who loves Star Wars, and he's showing how much he loves Star Wars, and his date's not into it. So, you know what? Sometimes the garbage takes itself out. So, Marfalump dodged a bullet in my opinion. So we stan Marfalump, the alien who loves Pepsi just as much as he loves Star Wars. So
oh my gosh, yeah, that's the best commentary on this commercial that you will ever hear.
So do you have all of the cans, Silver?
I do. I have all of the cans along with the I have all the cans. I have the inflatable cans that were hung in grocery stores. I have those. along with the Pepsi machine that comes with these cans.
That's right.
I think the Pepsi tie-in is actually one of my favorite parts of the Phantom Menace. It's just like things I remember with my dad. My dad would collect these cans before the movie came out, and it was a big deal. He had to make sure he had, you know, each one of the cans. Even when he got the 20-ounce bottles, you can win like a free Yoda statue. So he was always looking for that too. He consumed a lot of soda, I think.
Did you ever get the gold Yoda can?
No, I did not get the gold. I have the inflatable gold Yoda can. Oh. I have like at the store display. So I have the big one that hangs on the ceiling. So that's the only as close as I'm going to get to the actual Yoda can.
Wow. Yeah. And so the cans, so for the 24 that you have, and right, and these were also like, this was across Pepsi, Mountain Dew, all the Pepsi products. So you obviously had to branch out if you were only a Pepsi person. Well, and you wanted all these cans, you had to buy some things that maybe you didn't drink. Do you have the whole collection like displayed somewhere silver, or is it currently just like kind of collected together somewhere else?
I have it displayed. I have them actually. The one I set that I have, they came out with a Pepsi came out with like a collection set that came in like an enclosed case. And you open up the case, there's an N1 Starfighter in front of the case. And if you open it up, it has stored all the sodas, all the cans.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I have that case along with the soda cans, and it's displayed on top of the Pepsi machine that I have.
So good.
Of course.
You have to, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I wish I had a lot of it so I could put inside the machine, but I don't. And, those cans are emptied, obviously, because they don't hold well throughout the years, especially 25 years. Yeah. But those cans are pretty cool. They have like even a description of like each character, which is really fun too. So before the movie, you picked up a can and it's like, oh, wow, like here's a character. And they're describing, Boss Nass and who Boss Nass was. And that was another fun way to kind of get to know brand new characters too.
Yeah.
My siblings and I tried to collect as many of them as possible. I think we ended up at like 16 or 17. We never finished the collection. And I do distinctly remember buying a 6-pack of like Coke Zero that none of us drank, because we needed one of the characters. I can't remember who it was. It might have been Mace Windu. I remember we got it. I opened up a can to try it and was like, I don't, or like Pepsi, whatever the Pepsi Zero, the Diet Pepsi.
Yeah.
Was and I was like, I don't like this, and I just dumped it out. And so we just dumped it out, and we had a whole bunch, we had like 6 cans. But that, you know, buying soda that we didn't drink, you know, we did that. And I remember, you know, we'd go out on walks, and I'd find a can on the side of the road that was one I didn't have, and so I'd pick it up and I'd take it home with me. You know, I would find them anywhere I could, you know. Yeah. Whenever I was at a friend's house and they had, you know, something I didn't have, I'd be like, can I just take that home?
I know. I remember my dad also like letting everybody in the our family know, like, hey, if you guys are drinking these sodas and they have these Star Wars characters, can you guys save them for me? I think like people were saving them for my dad. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, I definitely recruited my mom to do that for me. Like, she was one of nine, so like with all of her siblings, she's like, if any of you buy cans, and like I had two cousins that also really loved Star Wars, but I had my mom do the end because my aunt wasn't asking. So I was like, Mom, ask all your sisters and brothers if they get any of these cans. And I don't remember how many I had. Like, 13-year-old Carl probably would have told you he had them all without actually knowing how many there were, because I don't think I knew there were 24. I know I had enough that like our little, like my dad built us like a clubhouse in our backyard when we were kids, and windowsills were lined with the cans. So I know that they at least filled all the windowsills. I'm not sure if that's all of them or not. I definitely never had the gold Yoda. But I loved collecting them. And for that very purpose that you were saying, Silver, I love that we got these brief character descriptions of every single character too. It was awesome.
It's just the excitement, right? You know, like it's a Star Wars movie 16 years after the original one. It's just so many brand new characters, so many brand new worlds. And it's just like, you know, what a perfect way to kind of, you know, tie that in into the merchandising promotion. Like, you know, it's crazy. I can't imagine being like an original trilogy, like
happy
fan
10th anniversary, back happy in the day, 10 year anniversary.
And then like really like just being like, oh my gosh, who are all these characters? This is like insane. This is like too much. which is pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, those Pepsi stuff, those Pepsi cans are just like some of my, like one of my favorites.
They were awesome. Yeah. I loved them.
I would love it if any movie would do that again, you know, like it doesn't have to be as extensive. It doesn't have to be 24 cans, but just like, you know, do a release with like characters on the cans again. You know, I think that would be awesome.
Coke is doing that right now with Marvel. And I had no idea. Yeah. So my husband, he drinks Coke's, the Coke Zeros. So he has the little mini cans with the Coke Zeros, and it's Iron Man is in the case that we have, which is pretty cool.
Oh, that is cool.
Yeah. So it's fun. It's just fun. It's just like, oh, makes you just want to buy the soda. Be like, oh, this is my favorite character. Let me just buy the soda.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great marketing.
Absolutely.
Well, and you know, the last thing I wanted to mention with all the hype stuff building up was, of course, all the Happy Meals we got. And, you know, they worked with Taco Bell, KFC, and Pizza Hut to give us some really fun Star Wars toys.
The galaxy's most legendary heroes, fearsome villains, and coolest vehicles. Now available to take home and play with at Pizza Hut, KFC, and Taco Bell. Right now, at participating Taco Bell locations, you can get one of these cool Star Wars Episode 1 collectible toys. One in every Taco Bell kids meal you buy.
Do y'all remember those toys?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I remember everything about that. the KFC, Taco Bell, and Pizza Hut trifecta was just really, really fun. Yeah, definitely remember the toys. I remember the cups more than anything, for sure.
Yeah,
that's something my dad needed to have. He had to go buy. He went and bought, like, he spent, gosh, how much was it? Was it $4.99, $8.99 for a cup? I don't remember. But I remember him, like, having to buy a character cup. Yeah, that whole promotion stuff is really fun. Like going to, and even like, I think one of my favorite stuff too is also the Pizza Hut. If you went to order a pizza from Pizza Hut, they gave you boxes with a character on it. So they had Jar Jar.
Right, yeah.
They had Darth Maul. I mean, imagine just ordering pizza on a Friday night and then your pizza gets delivered and there's a Darth Maul on your pizza box. Like, it's just brilliant and so much fun. But I gotta say, like, definitely this stuff is what I remember most prior to the movie, because it was just like that. I remember just like I think maybe because I live next to a Taco Bell, and like I just remember seeing the window clings of like all over the windows and like the big banner on the building, and that's just like that's what I remember like leading up to the movie. Definitely was this was the Taco Bell KFC Pizza Hut collab.
Yeah, we didn't do KFC or Taco Bell all that much back in the day. We did go to Pizza Hut sometimes back when Pizza Hut was a sit down place that you could actually go to.
Ooh, yeah.
and enjoy your food there. And so I did get a couple of things from all of this, not nearly as many as I wanted. I think I ended up with like two or three, maybe four of the collectibles. But the crazy thing was, is you get the box and you'd open it up, and on the inside of the box, it's printed like all the different planets and all the toys that go with associated with each planet.
Mm.
But each restaurant was associated with a different planet. So I can't remember which one was which, but you had one planet that was Coruscant, you had a Tatooine, and you had Naboo. And each restaurant had the stuff for each different planet. And so if you wanted the whole collection, you'd have to visit to all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, yeah. That's definitely a big blind spot for me. We never ate Taco Bell, and there was no KFC in the town where I grew up or anywhere nearby. We did go to Pizza Hut, so I'm sure I got a couple things from there, but I don't remember these that much. I remember them more now just from like people having shared them over the years, but that was definitely a blind spot for me. Mm-hmm. When this stuff was coming
out. I know
out.
The one I definitely got the the Coruscant that opens up, you hit the button, the planet opens up, and there's the Senate pod that sort of bobs up and down until that you gotta close it to reset it. I had the walking chair, the Nemoidian walking chair. And then the Boss Nass that you squeeze to squirt water. I know I had all of those. And I think I had like one or two more. I know I was given some of them by friends. And so I did not collect all of them myself, but I was given a few of them. And those cups, Silver, I had the Boss Nass one, the big character. Oh, my God.
Just flashing your tarples over there.
Yeah, she's flashing tarples at us right now. And it's glorious. It's glorious. These character cups. I got the Boss Nass one. I would love to find the rest of them. How many of those are there, Silver?
12.
12. Okay.
Yeah, there's 12 of them. I got really lucky recently. Someone had connected me online. Someone connected me and said, "Hey, I have a friend in San Francisco who's getting rid of all his Phantom Menace stuff, and you know he's willing to donate to you if you want to go pick it up." I said, "Sure, why not?" So I go, you know, thinking like it's just like collectibles, and no, it was a guy who used to work at KFC and Taco Bell back in the day. So he had one. He had two sets of all the toys in the boxes, all wrapped still, the complete set of all the Happy Meal or the kids' meal toys. He had all the cups. He had double of all the cups with the lids and the straws, all packaged. He had like a bunch of like the promotion stuff, like on like the stuff that would go on the glass doors and hang from the ceiling. He even gave me, he doesn't work for the company anymore, so he can't get fired. It was actual training binder of this rollout. So if you worked at Taco Bell, KFC, and Pizza Hut, it was like the manager training book to train all the employees of like, hey, we have this big rollout, you know, this is what you need to know. A couple of aprons. It's pretty insane. I just walked in thinking, oh, I'm just gonna go get a bunch of like just toys, and it's like, oh no, this is actually this is the whole complete set of the KFC, Taco Bell, Pizza Hut shebang, which is it's pretty insane.
That's amazing.
So
that's a glorious jackpot right there.
Yeah, honestly, the binder and the VHS of the training of the employees of the rollout of the Star Wars rollout is really funny. That's probably one of those, you're never gonna find anything like this. I think this in particular really just hyped up the movie more for me. Cause I think this is just like my earliest memory of Phantom Menace coming out, was this whole promotion. Cause I remember the commercials too. The commercials had the Pizza Hut girl, Colonel Sanders, and the Taco Bell dog. And they would like go on these adventures. And, you would also have to watch like every commercial was just like, leading up to the battle on Naboo with these three characters. They were just like, they were a team. It was really funny.
That's amazing.
So bizarre. I love it. It's so weird. I just hold this, especially this specifically, just like hold like near and dear to my heart. This is like, this is really silly. It's just like, I've never seen like anything close to this afterwards. Like, you know, like,
no.
Maybe like what was cool, even like in Burger King did it like for like the original trilogy with the cool like glass cups. Mm-hmm. I think those are really cool. Mm-hmm. And I know Revenge of the Sith had a big like Burger King line too. But I mean, come on, three restaurants or fast food places coming together. It's pretty fun.
But by the way, just a side note, is there a more iconic marketing spokesperson than the Taco Bell dog?
No.
In history. No.
No. Yo Kiddo Taco Bell. That Chihuahua, man. He was – that was – where'd he go? Bring him back.
Yeah, right? Psst. Hey, Yo Quiero Taco Bell.
Honestly, it was the best. Yeah, that Chihuahua. They even sold plushies of that little Chihuahua.
We had one. Like I said, we almost never went to Taco Bell.
Yeah.
But they were the best commercials in the 90s and early 2000s.
Yeah, for sure.
Hands down.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Oh. Well, there is so much stuff that we could still dive into with the hype, but I think this is a good point to start wrapping it up, because we've hit all the big things. You know, the toys were huge, the soundtrack was huge, and then just this endless marketing across so many different platforms, from sodas to, you know, it was everywhere. And you couldn't go anywhere in the spring of 1999, and like you said, Jason, and just see something Phantom Menace splashed onto it. But before we go, I'm going to ask you probably a very hard question, Silver, and I apologize. And if you need to take a minute, feel free. But of all of this Phantom Menace hype stuff, you know, that all the items that you have, do you have a favorite?
Do I have a favorite item?
Yeah.
Jeez. Let's see. A favorite item. You know what? I'm a sucker. I'm not going to say an item. I'm going to just say like idea.
Okay.
The Jar Jar tongue thing is really funny. I think it's weird. I think it's bizarre. I think it's gross, but I love it so much. They knew that that Jar Jar had a long tongue, and they just went for it. I recently picked up this Jar Jar sticky tongue, which is,
oh man,
this guy. It's the idea of selling anything that has to do with Jar Jar Binks's tongue is pretty wild for me, and it's pretty. I don't think anything will ever come close to it. I don't foresee them doing anything similar to that ever again.
No,
it's just one of those things that happened in 1999, and I just think it's great. I love that idea, as wild and crazy it sounds. I'm a volunteer at Rancho Obi-Wan, and every time we get to the Jar Jar Binks tongue part of the tour, that's probably like the big reaction we get from everybody. Just like, what is that? Why are we doing this? But it's silly, it's fun, it's weird. And I love it. So I don't have the night. I just have I like the idea of involving Jar Jar Binks's tongue and stuff. It's weird. And also there's like, on top of that, there's also like an action figure where he's in the Mos Espa market, and I forget what. And you know what I mean? It's just like, they just involved, I don't know, his tongue.
He's got his hands up like on it by his ears. He's like doing the, and it's got the tongue that you can, you know, detach and stick in the mouth.
Yeah.
I don't have that one.
Yeah.
Need it.
Yeah. The Jar Jar Binks tongue is it's probably one of my favorites. So.
I do remember having like the plush Jar Jar that you squeeze his stomach and the tongue would.
Yeah, it comes out. The tongue comes out.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
It's insane. I love it. They really went for it. They said, you know what? Let's make this silly.
I still have that plush. The whatever it is that's in the tongue that comes out has a hole in it inside the felt, so it doesn't extend that much anymore. It just sort of like, you can hear the air rushing out of the hole now, because I use that so much.
Yeah. Why would I still have it? Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And he had little chubas that you could that velcroed onto the tongue.
Yeah, and it was
fantastic. Yes. Oh my god.
Oh man. Well, we are, you know, as we were sit here and record this, and as it hits tomorrow, we're just a couple days out from getting to see this movie again on the big screen. I know every one of us is excited about that. The three of us here, as well as probably you listening, probably why you're all excited about this. I want to end this kind of going back to where it all began, and let's go into a theater opening night with none other than Rick McCallum.
This is fucking awesome. Yeah!
Y'all, I just had to take us out with that. It's I had never experienced anything like that before in a theater. And I remember there was a lot of excitement when I was there for the special editions in 97. There was definitely some hooting and hollering, lots of excitement, but there was nothing like Phantom Menace. And to this day, Force Awakens was awesome. It was super electric, but it still was not. It was just this unbridled cheer of joy when Phantom Menace hit that big screen. And of course we're not going to probably get that this coming weekend because it's already been out. We've all seen it, you know, and I think we'll all be excited,
right?
But it's a nostalgic excitement. And I mean, not just nostalgic. I mean, we all genuinely love this movie and I know I'm just excited to see it on the big screen again. But man, there was something about that, those nights on May 19th, 1999, when people just like erupted. There was this anticipation, just there's nothing else to do but scream.
Right. Especially if you've camped out for 200 days.
Right.
It's fine. All of that time has been building and building, yeah, until finally it's just like, ah!
Yeah. So.
Oh my god.
That
goodness.
Or they're stretching, you know, getting their good stretch out or something. Yeah. Yeah, you know what? I'm really excited for this week to experience this movie again. You know, I love Star Wars on the big screen. You know, I watch this movie once, twice a week, but it's going to be really exciting to watch it. I'm also looking forward to a lot of like new Star Wars fans who've never experienced this in theaters. Yeah. Like this is going to be really, mm-hmm, really cool for them. And I can't wait. I'm going on Monday with my dad. Can't wait to go watch the movie with my dad, man. He took me when special. I was a kid. So I can't wait to go with him. Do a little matinee showing and watch Phantom Menace. It's going to be really fun.
That is really special. Yeah. I'm excited. I have a little Star Wars group at the college I work at, and I'm taking a group of them Monday night next week. And not, obviously none of them have seen it on the big screen. They're not old enough. So I can't wait to watch them watch
yeah.
it. You know what I mean?
It'd be awesome.
It's going to be super magical. So folks, super excited. Next week, Jason and I will be back to kind of talk about that experience of watching again on the big screen. We do have a couple of friends joining us next week who have never seen it on the big screen. So excited to talk with folks who got to experience it for their first time next week. So hopefully you'll come back and join us for that. But before we go, as always, Silver, it's such a pleasure getting you to come on the show. I mean, you are my favorite Star Wars page to follow. It's nothing but unbridled joy for Star Wars, and I love it. And you find the coolest stuff. I mean, you are a like real life bounty hunter, except you don't, you know, take lives or anything like that. But like the things you find are so cool. So before we wrap, in case folks are not aware of you and your social media platforms, where can folks find you?
Yeah, you know, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Star Wars Thrifting. I'm more active on the weekends when I'm out doing stuff. Not this weekend. I'm going to be camping out in the theaters watching Phantom Menace.
Yes.
But yeah, check me out there. I love Star Wars. I love Phantom Menace. I love meeting new friends. So catch me on there and let's talk Star Wars. Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you for being with us.
Yeah. And Silver, if you ever need to find a new home for that giant 4-foot stuffed Jar Jar that's sitting on the floor back there, please let me know.
Funny, great story about this Jar Jar. I do thrifting on vacation. So I went to Seattle and I found this Jar Jar on Facebook Marketplace and I picked it up and I drove back home with him. And all my friends who live in Seattle were like, are you joking me? You come to Seattle for 2 days and you walk away with that? We've been living here and we've never found anything like this. And I'm like, yeah, that's just kind of a hint of who I am. I'll go and sneak things past you. That's awesome. Yeah. He's just sitting there.
He's great. He's great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, Carl, if people want to weigh in on some of their favorite memories of the hype of The Phantom Menace back in 99 or what they're looking forward to this coming weekend to seeing it again for, you know, May the 4th this year, where can people get in contact with us?
Yeah, we are on Instagram at The Wampa's Lair. You can always follow us on Twitter at Wampa's Lair or shoot us an email at wampaslairpodcast@gmail.com. And before I forget, if you're interested in listening to me talk in a Zoom webinar this weekend about Star Wars and religion, how Star Wars kind of acts as a popular form of religion, shoot us a message on either a social media platform, send us an email. I can send you that Zoom link. Very excited to kind of put on my professional master of theology hat and my geek love of Star Wars hat and talk about these things on Sunday evening. So if you're interested, let us know.
Absolutely. I will be there. But that's going to wrap this episode up. We have preparations to make before seeing this movie again in the theaters, so we need to get to that. Thank you again, Silver, for coming on the show. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening to this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This has been episode number 556, The Hype. For Carl and Silver, I'm Jason. We're about to get hyped, and we'll see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.